This is the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, and my name is Brian Dinovellis. Thank you so much for listening and downloading the pod. Whew, it has certainly been a wacky year for a number of our teams in the Tri-State, and that's not a good thing. All right, seasons of hope have quickly dissolved into seasons of mope with no end in sight. There is no light at the end of this dark tunnel. I'm talking about you, Rutgers, and I'm certainly talking about you, Seton Hall, because we're witnessing a season we haven't witnessed in 40, 41 years. And at Rutgers, on the banks, this was supposed to be the season of all seasons since 1976. This was supposed to be the season, the second greatest season, at least, if not better, than we saw in 1976. Instead, we're seeing the train come off the track. We are seeing the wheels come off. And that's not a good thing, because when you're Rutgers and you've dealt with this forever, what else can go wrong? Well, we're seeing something else is going wrong. Is there some glimmer of hope? Is there a chance? Well, as long as there are games to be played, there's always a chance. So yes, I am saying there's a chance. We're going to talk about Rutgers with Rutgers beat writer at NJ.com, Brian Fonseca. He will give us some answers, tell us what's happened, why it's happened, and provide some glimmer of hope for the Scarlet Knights. Plus, not all is lost in the Tri-State. Certainly not at St. John's, because they have become the shining light. They have become the toast of the town once again. And over in Connecticut, Quinnipiac, look out. The Bobcats are cooking under Tom Pecora, and they are in first place in the MAC, along with Merrimack and along with Marist. Quinnipiac is right where we thought they would be in the always challenging and ever unpredictable MAC conference. So we're going to get to all of that in just a bit. But first, I want to thank our sponsor. We are brought to you by Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577. Tell Mike that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, so let's begin with Rutgers. And welcome to my guest. He's not only the Rutgers beat writer for NJ.com, he's also an alumnus of the State University of New Jersey, having graduated in 2018. So if anyone knows the highs and the lows of being a Rutgers fan, it's Brian Fonseca. Bri, welcome. I finally got you on the podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an honor. I appreciate the invitation on the pod. And listen, I was a student during the low lows of the Eddie Jordan era, and I was cutting my teeth as a beat writer during the highs of the Steve Peichel era, and now we're at kind of a crossroads here, a very interesting situation that I don't think anybody thought we would be at this point, but I think since the early parts of January, it was kind of trending to where we are now, and which is, the reality is that Rutgers is, barring the most miraculous turnaround in the history of its program, going to have to win the Big Ten tournament to even sniff March Madness, which, again, if you told me that early in the season when they had two NBA players and you thought where things could have been going, this was about as worst case scenario as it could have gotten.
Yeah, I listen, unless you worked for Blue Ribbon and you predicted, and we saw that, Rutgers 15th in this conference, we're like, what, are they crazy? I mean, listen, they didn't get everyone right in the Big Ten, but somehow they've trended in this direction, and that's the only source that I can find that predicted Rutgers would be at this point. How surprised are you, Bri? Because I certainly did not see this coming.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are surprised. A lot of the people that follow the program closely are surprised, and people that have looked at this program on the periphery and saw, oh, they have two NBA prospects, not two NBA prospects, two top three NBA prospects, you'd think that they'd be a shoo-in for the tournament. Give credit to Blue Ribbon for seeing through that, right? I think they took a lot of heat from people locally here, from people around the program. And again, they were going out on a limb, but sometimes when you're 30,000 feet away and not like us watching the day-to-day here, maybe you saw the cracks that are becoming obvious now, right? I think people that are local, the fans, the media that follow the team, maybe if we did see some red flags, either we tried to not see it or we didn't want to bring it up because it's hard to interrupt the good vibes around the program. But now that, we're at this point, I think it's clear that the supporting cast around these two elite players just is not there. They did not do a good job of creating a foundation around Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey that would create some success. And that is kind of just the one issue that has snowballed into where we are now. So surprised? Yes, I'm surprised because on paper, this seemed like a season that could have been the best year at Rutgers since 1976, which I wasn't around for. I think. But even if you played out the worst case scenarios, right? Like in the preseason, we had our season preview, and I had a section in our preview of like, the worst case scenario. It was this: guys around Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey aren't performing at a high level, and things kind of go where they are. But I never predicted them to be 10-10 through 20 games and to have a loss to Princeton and a loss to Kennesaw State. It feels like everything that could have gone wrong has.
Right. And listen, we wanted to like this. Everyone has Final Four aspirations in September, right? But we wanted to like this cast. Zach Martini was had DNA and was a winner and a proven commodity as a role player, right? We thought he'd come in and shoot better and handle this better. Tyson Acuff, my gosh, the number four leading scorer in the country, goes down with the injury. Well, he missed a lot of the preseason, but now we've seen him in enough games to say maybe he's not made for this level. PJ Hayes, we thought would be better. I mean, I guess the only player who's kind of lived up to his role maybe is Jordan Durkack, who had a career day yesterday. We missed on a lot of these. Not only did we, but the Rutgers staff here. So I guess if we're pointing the fingers, it kind of, I guess the blame goes around to everybody here, Bri.
The blame is on the Rutgers coaching staff who completely botched this roster. That's just the reality, and it's a harsh reality, but it's the truth, right? And I think they had a lot of slots here to fill with a lot of the departures from last year's roster, which was a good thing, right? Most of last year's roster was not good enough to play at this level, and they cleared them out as they should. The issue is that they did not replace them with players that could play them at this level. They took a lot of risks in adding guys that were not only were they not at the high major level, most of them weren't at the mid-major level, right? Like a guy like PJ Hayes was a role player at San Diego, and you think that he could come in and maybe become an efficient player at low usage at this level. That's the other part of the issue is that guys like PJ Hayes and Zach Martini have not been put in positions to accentuate their strengths. They're three-point shooters that aren't getting open three-point looks by the flow of the offense, an offense that is largely predicated on isolation scoring. That's been the case throughout Steve Peichel's tenure, and it worked to a certain extent with Geo Baker and Ron Harper Jr. And it works to an extent when you have Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, who are, perfect isolation scorers, but you can't just depend on those guys to do everything, right? And when you need a bucket from Zach Martini or PJ Hayes, you're not putting them in position to score on the wing. You're not getting them open looks. I can't remember the last time, PJ Hayes was found in the corner for an open three. Well, mostly because he hasn't been playing, but the point being, even when he was, I just don't remember that happening. So that's part of the issue. And I think there's obviously a glaring miss in not adding a center. I think anyone that has watched Rutgers basketball for the past year and saw that Cliff Omori was leaving at Alabama, the first priority was adding a center. That was the number one priority. And they just didn't do that. And as much as Steve Peichel tried to quell concerns about it in the preseason, the obvious is happening in front of us. And especially now, so that Emmanuel Opelay is out for the year. Now you have really one true center on this roster, which is just going to turn a situation that was bad, a team that was getting destroyed in the paint and on the glass throughout the Big Ten schedule. Now they're even more vulnerable. I can't imagine what's going to happen when Michigan and their monster centers come in to Piscataway or Illinois with some of their monster centers, or when they go back to Mackey Arena against Purdue. Like, it's a scary proposition. But ultimately, again, just to wrap the point, the root cause of all this is that there was not proper management of the roster, allocation of resources, and creation of a foundation around the two freshmen. Because as much as people want to say you can't win with freshmen, the two freshmen are the only reason Rutgers is 10-10 and not 0-20, right? Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey have been the two best players on the floor practically every time they've played. I think there's 12 players on this roster. They're 11 and 12, and the reasons why this isn't succeeding.
And look, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but we know in this day and age of we're still in fifth year, sixth year seniors, sixth year, players getting this extra year of eligibility, 23, 24-year-old men, If you don't have experience and good experience on your roster, Rutgers is learning this the hard way with veterans and size and manhood. You're just going to be bludgeoned to death inside and pushed out whether you're a guard or not. And the physicality of this Big Ten league, we're seeing players with grown men push Rutgers around time in and time out, Brian.
Yeah, and look, the experience thing is valuable. I agree with that. And the size is valuable. But the most important thing here is talent. Rutgers had a 24-year-old man at center in Emmanuel Oboye, the most jacked man you have ever seen play basketball for Rutgers. And he's getting pushed around and beat inside because he's not talented and he doesn't know where to be, right? That's the reality. Rutgers has experienced players on this roster. PJ Hayes is a fifth-year senior. Tyson Acuff is a fifth-year senior. Jeremiah Williams is a fifth-year senior. I'm forgetting a guy. Zach Martini is a
Jack
fifth-year
Martini,
senior.
yeah.
These guys have been around the block and played college basketball, so experience only takes you so far. You need talent. And outside of Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, Rutgers just does not have enough talent to win in the Big Ten.
But there's somebody who's really disappointed this year, Jeremiah Williams. I mean, he led this team in scoring last year, and he looks lost at times. How can he go from being the alpha male to, I mean, having zero confidence in his offensive sets?
I would honestly say the issue might be a little too much confidence. At times, he's playing just kind of out of control. And, he had four turnovers against, or five turnovers against Penn State. And sometimes he's just driving to the hoop and throwing shots up despite not, having two defenders in his face because it seems like he's really, pushing the issue. There's a big difference in his role this year, where last year, to your point, he was the alpha. He came in, they put the ball in his hands, and the season was going nowhere. They kind of figured, why not? And he did lead them to four straight wins in an impressive stretch, but that was at the point where he was the guy. He had the ball in his hands. He was the point guard. Now he's the third option at best, right? And he's probably not the main point guard. Obviously, that's going to Dylan Harper, as it should. And I think he and a lot of these guys are having a hard time figuring out what their role is exactly, right? And I think the demotion in his responsibilities are correlated to some extent in the regression in his production. Right, I think Rutgers depended or thought he would be this third scorer, and I think on paper he was the best candidate to be the third scorer next to the two freshmen. And I agree with you. I think his season has been disappointing. I think he would agree with you, just production-wise, and just there's something missing there. But again, he's far from the only guy who was disappointed this year.
I mean, I know you like to give these grades and you detail your grades on NJ.com. And if you don't follow Brian, give him a follow on Twitter and go on NJ.com. I mean, he's grading these players after every game and there's blame to go around everywhere. I want to get back to Paykel here, okay? You were at that press conference at the Garden and your colleague Steve Politi asked a question of Paykel about was he surprised about the expectations? Is he surprised? And he couldn't even finish the question, and Paykel immediately started answering. Here's how it all played down.
Steve, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to say there are a lot of Rutgers fans who are a little shocked or surprised to see you guys at 500 at this point in the season. I'm just curious if there's any feeling by you personally, if you're at all surprised to see this
I
team where it is
love
at this point.
Rutgers. I love Rutgers, and I'm so happy that these are the expectations that we have now. When I took over the program 9 years ago, we were just trying to win one Big Ten game. Now we're selling out or close to selling out Madison Square Garden. We've got a team that has a 3.2 GPA. We've taken to back-to-back NCAA tournaments, would have been to a third, went to an NIT. I got two guys up here that wanted to be at Rutgers. The landscape of college basketball has changed. These guys said yes to us, so I'm so proud, of all those things. Do I want to have more wins? We all do. We want to be undefeated. These guys want to be undefeated. I'm just thankful. No, the Rutgers people have been awesome. So I will tell you that they've been awesome. I get more great emails. Just keep fighting, coach. And we sell out every game at Jersey Mike's. And I'm real proud that that's what these guys have developed here. And, the season hasn't gone exactly the way, but none of my nine seasons have gone exactly the way, that I've wanted it to, or predictions and all those kind of things. I'm just glad. And we are in the best league in the country from 1 to 18. So. You fight through the tough times, you get healthy, you can do some special things. There's still a lot of season left, and that's what we're looking forward to. We're close. We're close. That's the best team in the league. So, we're close.
Okay, Bry. So you've heard it. You were there in person. We're close. We're close. We're close. What did you think of that entire exchange and how Paykel responded?
I wasn't surprised. I mean, this is kind of just the way he operates when, there is a little bit of pressure and there are questions of that sort, challenging questions. It's not, I mean, I've been on the end where I've had my question cut off before I'm able to finish it, right? Steve wasn't even able to ask him if he was surprised at the way the season's going before Steve kind of started getting, defensive. And listen, I understand he's under immense pressure. He is the face of the most disappointing season in Rutgers basketball history. And a lot of people around college basketball are tuning into this Rutgers program and wondering what is going on. And obviously he's going to be the number one guy that people look to, right? I understand that's an enormous pressure point to be at and a difficult situation. So I think he could have done better with addressing the situation head on, right? Everyone knows what is happening at Rutgers right now, how disappointing the season has been. To acknowledge that would be, I think, helpful for fans, right? I think fans would like to see a coach say, listen, we're at a bad spot right now, right? I don't think he even really acknowledged that. It's got to feel like he's throwing sand in people's eyes, saying that we're close, because I mean, I'm sure you watched the game yesterday. I've watched every game this year, obviously. I don't see it. I don't see it. If anything, they're getting worse, right? And obviously, it doesn't help that Dylan Harper has not been at 100% for this entire month, practically. But I don't see any progress going forward. And to bring up the GPA, I know that's just kind of one of the many talking points he brings up in these answers. It seems like he has these stock answers. And listen, sometimes it works out when maybe we are being a little overzealous to the media and things aren't as bad as they may appear. Things are really bad right now. And to bring up a 3.2 GPA, especially at the era of the NIL, where one, you have two, your two best players are going to the NBA next year. Three or four of your guys are 1 year loans that are going to graduate and leave. Like, the GPA in this era doesn't matter. To make that the second point you bring up when you're trying to defend this disaster of a season, it's just a bad optics, a bad look. And I'm sure if he can get that answer back, he would at the very least not mention the GPA.
Sure. Listen, he obviously went in complete defensive mode there, as you know, the as a father would for his child, the father, the face of this program. I mean, here's a question that I've started thinking about over the past couple of weeks. And do you think in any way, if Steve had, he's a defensive coach first, right? He's found success in building up guys and finding undervalued and underappreciated and under recruited players, right? I think all of us, if given the opportunity to go from, a used, Honda Accord and try to drive a Porsche, we're getting behind the wheel of that Porsche. Do you think in any way that he would go back and do it differently, or would he do it the same way?
You do it the same way. You can't say no to having Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey on your team. And again, I cannot emphasize enough, they are not the reason this team is not successful. The issue is because they were unsuccessful in that exact formula that you mentioned, right? Steve Peichel built this program with Geo Baker, Ron Harper, Caleb McConnell, underrated guys, Miles Johnson, underrated guys they found, developed, and created, right? It's more difficult in this era. It's not impossible. If you look back at the recruiting classes prior to this year, there were a ton of under-recruited guys that did not follow Geo Baker and Caleb McConnell's path. They're guys that ended up where a lot of low three-stars guys go. They just don't live up to that level. Guys like Derek Simpson, Antoine Wolfolk, Gavin Griffith's a prime example, Jaden Jones, guys that just they were on it, they missed, they were recruiting misses, right? And that kind of piles up upon each other. And it had they developed one or two of those guys into becoming steady forces on this team, then you'd have the best of both worlds, developmental guys and these five-star freshmen, and maybe even a transfer or two. You don't need to fill four spots with transfers. You fill two spots, you have more resources to pull together for those two guys, you get higher quality guys. So it's all a snowball effect here, right? And then even to wrap up the point on development, the two guys you did develop that would be perfect for this team, Cliff Omori and Muwat Magg, who would take this team to infinitely more levels, right? They're a rim protecting big man and a on ball defender that will take this team to exactly what this team is missing. Those two guys go out in their last year of eligibility and get a payday, one at BYU and one at Alabama. And listen, Rutgers just is not at the point now where they can compete with those teams in an NIL arms race. It's just not the reality. That is also a conversation for another day. A lot of factors in why Rutgers was not prepared to compete NIL wise in this crucial year. That blame can be going any sort of way, but I think Pat Hobbs and Steve Peichel principally are responsible for that, right? Just not being prepared to have money to get good players in the transfer portal. But anyway, to your point, to answer your original question, I know I'm long-winded in all these
That's
answers,
okay.
but to answer your question, if he had a chance to do it again, would he take Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey? I think he'd be a fool not to. I think any coach would be a fool not to accept those two guys on their roster.
Jim Calhoun had given him advice in the beginning of the year. You know, you have to let these guys kind of do as they please, and they have. But you said it, and we've all seen it. The supporting cast is not Big Ten caliber. And Cliff Amore was gone. He was not coming back, and neither was Mo Mac. I think both of those bridges, for different reasons, were burned. So, all right, let's try to move forward here, Bri. You know, you've said it in your columns, you've said it in your articles, you said it early in the podcast. You know, unless this team runs the table, 10-1, 11-0, let's face it, they're going to be in the 11 games left, right? They are underdogs in 9 of those 11 games right now. How do they get out of this? And if you're Steve Peichel, where do you begin? You got Northwestern. You know, give me some path here, Brian.
If I was Steve Peichel, right, and I don't think Steve Peichel or almost any coach in college basketball would do this, if I was Steve Peichel, I would focus my entire energy on doing enough to qualify for the Big Ten tournament, resting Dylan Harper as much as I can, because him playing 11 games at 50% is not worth it. I want him playing at 100% the last 5 or 6 games, however long it takes for him to heal from the sprained ankle. I would rest Dylan Harper as much as I can. I try to win as many games as I can without him playing, and then do enough to make it to the Big Ten tournament, and then put all of my eggs in the Big Ten tournament basket. Because again, that is the only realistic scenario here. They're not going to win 9 of their last 11 games. It's just not going to happen, right? It would take a miracle beyond miracles. So that's what I would do. What I think he's going to do is I think he's going to do what most college basketball coaches do, try to win every game from here on out, starting with Northwestern. And to do that, you got to hope Ace Bailey just plays out of his mind. That's the number one prerequisite. You got to hope that Dylan Harper can give you 20 minutes at a 75% level, which who knows? Ankles obviously are tricky, so you never really know what's going to happen there. And you got to hope that, these last few games, there's been at least one guy that stepped up and had, like Jordan Durkack against Michigan State, had this game that nobody expected, right? Over the 2-game win streak, you had Dylan Grant playing at a really high level, especially
Yeah.
compared to what people expected, right? You got to hope that Zach Martini against Nebraska and against, I believe it was UCLA, had a really good game, right? He had a bounce back game. You got to hope that one or two of these guys tags along and plays at a high level and becomes the third scorer they need. But essentially, they need a lot of things to go right. And I think the only realistic option you have, and again, by realistic, I mean this is about a 10% chance of making the Big Ten tournament, of making the NCAA tournament, is you make the Big Ten tournament and you pray for an NC State style run where you just get scorching hot in March. But obviously, if I was a betting man right now, I would put all my money on Rutgers not making the tournament. It does not seem realistic at this point. But
Right.
if you're one of the five people that still think it's a possibility, I think that's where you would hope things go.
Yeah, I think that's well said. You know, you have to get healthy because Harper, you know, the flu, now the ankle. And if this team's at 100% and they catch fire, stranger things have happened. You said it. You know, you win 5 in a row. But again, history's against Rutgers here. They've never made it to the semifinals. That would be the first time ever if they get to the Big Ten semifinals. Correct.
Correct.
You
And
know.
look, there's historic precedent here. In 1989, they were 10 and 12 after 22 games. They won their last 5 games of the regular season, and then they won 3 straight to win the Atlantic 10. And then they made the tournament and lost to Iowa in the first round. Obviously, significantly different times, a significantly different tournament, all of that. But history says that's the only avenue here. So.
Excellent. Bri, you know your Rutgers history. You've been a part of it. No one wants to see this team, you know, not do well, but they put themselves in a situation and, you know, people from the outside, oh my God, same old Rutgers, right? Rutgers fans saying, this is typical Rutgers. And the only way out of it is to win. And they're up against it, Bri. They're up against it. But I'm rooting for them. You're rooting for them. I guess we'll see what happens.
This is the most Rutgers thing that has ever happened. This is the most Rutgers has ever Rutgers. That's the reality. And I think Rutgers fans in the deep recesses of their brain in September were thinking to themselves, could this go wrong? And I think, unfortunately for them, and I do feel for them, there are people that have rooted for Rutgers basketball for 50 years through some very difficult times. And it finally seemed like this would be the year that all of that suffering and those treks to the rack with no hope of winning in the Eddie Jordan era and those close calls of making the tournament, all of that would have been worth it for this special winter. And to have those hopes be crushed, especially so early in the season, I do genuinely feel bad for them because. And you know, this podcast isn't about the future, but you look ahead after this year. I mean, there's not really much hope for significant improvement, at least in the near future. So,
You have building blocks. You have building blocks, but they're going to need a point guard. They're going to need another, a backup center. They're going to need 3-point shooters. I mean, there's a lot, there's a lot that they're going to need, and you have to get a major point guard. That is offseason number one, because I don't think Jamichael Davis, he's undersized. He's not the answer. So we'll save that for another day, Bri.
sure.
When they look ahead to the offseason, wherever the rest of this season takes them. Hey, great stuff. Give Bri a follow on Twitter. Read the column. Subscribe to NJ.com to get all of his updates, all of his articles, and all of his grades after every game. Appreciate the time, Bri. Great talking to you.
Thanks for having me on, man. Really appreciate it.
All right. Fantastic job by Brian Fonseca. And I forgot to mention, you can also watch and listen to his podcast on NJ.com along with Steve Politi every week right there on the website, NJ.com. Quote of the year. Quote of the year. This is the most Rutgers has ever Rutgers. This is the most Rutgers has ever Rutgers. It's a verb. It's become a verb. The only way out of it is to win. All right. Otherwise, it's the same old Jets. It's the same old Nets. It's the same old Rutgers. You see a pattern with teams like this that they can't get out of their own way. They can't win the big one. Even when expectations are high, they find a way to mess it up. In a year where the football team at Rutgers had everything going for them, they had the talent. They had fifth-year seniors. They had the schedule. They found a way to Rutgers it up. And now it's happening to the basketball team. There were possibly going to be books written about this most historic season for Rutgers football and Rutgers basketball, the stars aligning, all coming together at once. And then it's almost like the college sports gods got together and said, "No, wait a minute. Rutgers? Are you kidding me? No. This is not going to happen at Rutgers, okay? That's the reality of what's transpired here. That's the only explanation I can have for as to how both the football program and the men's basketball program have found a way to go into a tailspin and not have this season of all seasons in Rutgers athletics history. We'll see where it goes. There are still games out there. Steve Peichel said we're close. Okay, coach. Well, you can only be close for so long. You have to start closing and stop being close. All right, let's continue on this podcast. I want to get to St. John's and Quinnipiac. So, from the lows of Rutgers to the highs of St. John's, and they are having a season like we haven't seen since 1999. And before that, 1990. It's like the ghosts of Malik Sealy and Jason Williams and Boo Harvey are on that court, and Jason Buchanan and Ron Artest, right? Players of eras past that brought St. John's to relevance, brought St. John's the spotlight. MSG focusing in red, right? Well, the Knicks are there, the blue and orange is there, and you better believe the red is there because they are having crowds that they haven't seen in years. The garden is becoming a must-see ticket for St. John's, and Rick Pitino's team is on a roll. They are tied for first place with Marquette. They're 8-1 in conference play. They are 17-3. They've won six straight. They've won 12 of 13. And their latest win is a testament to how resilient this team is, how tough they are, how tenacious they are, how relentless they are. Down by 10 to Xavier at halftime, down by 16 early in the second half. This is the third Big East game this season that St. John's has found itself trailing by double digits at the half because they failed to really play up to their level in the first half. It happened at Providence. They squeaked out a win late. It happened against Georgetown at the Garden. They found a way to pull it out late. And it happened again against Xavier, and they found a way to pull it out late and put the clamps on. How? Defensively. All right. This team is not a good three-point shooting team. This team is not a good free throw shooting team. All right. In this day and age, to not be a good three-point shooting team and yet to have the record they have is unfathomable. Did I say that right? Unfathomable. Okay. This is a throwback team. And that's why I mentioned those teams from the top. We're going back to an era when three-point shooting in 1989, 90 was just coming in. And Boo Harvey was, that three-point shooter for St. John's. Well, there's no three-point shooter here. And this is a very unlike, this is a very un-Rick Pitino-like team because Pitino's known for what? Yes, tempo, yes, defense, but absolutely three-point shooters, right? His team's going back to Providence when the three-point shot first came into play in 86, 87. Those teams shot threes. He was always three is better than two, right? And if you're shooting 33% from three, it's like shooting 50% from two. So you have a team here that cannot shoot threes, is awful. I mean, they were 1 for 12 against Xavier, but somehow they're winning the old-fashioned way. And that to me, for a guy who played for a defensive-minded coach, I can't tell you how many defensive drills we did for Joe Riley at South Catholic. That's how you found your way onto the court. And this is how St. John's is defining itself. And it's so refreshing. Defense and rebounding. It takes me back. Yes, it does. Because it shows that defensive principles, fundamentals still exist. And how do they exist? Because Rick Pitino's preaching them and the players are buying in. That's the importance. Rick Pitino's preaching them and the players are buying in. They love defending. Listen to the quotes, right? From these players. They know their DNA is defense. And I've said it for weeks. It is the best defensive team in the Big East Conference. Better than Marquette, better than Georgetown. KenPom defensive efficiency still has them at number five in the country. Collectively, it is the best defensive team. Maybe there are better defenders in this conference. Maybe Stevie Mitchell is a better individual defender, but collectively, watch this team. Watch the way they run their offense with precision. They run it fast. They cut hard. And defensively, what they did to Xavier late in this game, okay, when Xavier had a chance to win this game in regulation, St. John's put the clamps on. There was nowhere for Xavier's guards to dribble, nowhere for them to pass. It was awesome. And they're doing it, St. John's, in so many other ways. All right. They're finding a way in an era of three-point shooting being a must to win. They have the best rebounding, offensive rebounding player in the Big East and the country in Zubi Ejiofor. Leads the country in offensive rebounds per game at 4.5. All right. They are the best defensive rebounding team in the Big East. They're second in block shots. They're second in steals. Turnover margin right behind Marquette. Offensive rebounds, number one in the Big East. So collectively, they're doing all of the other little things to hide the fact that they cannot shoot from three. The only team in the Big East that makes less three-pointers per game is Seton Hall. All right. And in terms of three-point shooting percentage, St. John's is right there at the bottom. There's no worse three-point shooting team in the Big East. So you get what I'm saying here. You get what I'm saying. This team is coming alive, and they're doing it without players that are key players. Brady Dunlap done for the season. Davon Smith has been injured, that shoulder. I hope it's not nagging him, but he hasn't been himself for 2.5 games. I know he gave it a go against Seton Hall, but he wasn't himself. So he's hurting, and the guy who stepped up has been Kadari Richmond. He had his best game as a Johnny, his best game in red. 19 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and the best stat of all, no turnovers. So I would say this before Davon Smith injury, okay? Davon Smith was the best guard on this team. Kadari Richmond had yet to really find his niche, had yet to really develop any consistency, confidence. And Davon Smith's departure has forced Kadari Richmond to play like Kadari Richmond. And I think finally, Kadari Richmond can look at himself in the mirror and say, I'm playing like Kadari Richmond. Now, will it continue when Davon Smith comes back? That's going to be fascinating. All right. Again, we had our questions in the summer when this first came about in the offseason. Would Davon Smith and Kadari Richmond be able to coexist? They can, but we haven't really seen both players at their best simultaneously. Patino said, Kadari's finally in shape. He's playing the minutes at the pace I need him to play. Zubi Ejiofor, the other captain, is singing praises. So where does Kadari Richmond go once Davon Smith is healthy? I'd like to see Kadari Richmond still doing things that he does. And you know what? Even if he's not having a great game, Patino has made it clear he wants the ball in his hands late in the game because he is the one that is going to be able to make the right play. He's the one that Patino trusts to get downhill, read the defense, and take what the defense gives him. So good for Kadari. Zubi Ejiofor, to me, has been the MVP of this team through the first half of the Big East season. It's going to get tougher. This team still has to play UConn twice. And the way UConn is playing, look, they just lost to Xavier. So UConn is now in fourth place as things stand. So how about that 1-4 matchup in the Big East semifinals? All right, a little different from last year when UConn was the one and St. John's was the five, right? But in that semifinal matchup. So keep an eye on those standings. But UConn loses at Xavier 1 game after Xavier lost a heartbreaker in overtime to St. John's. So Xavier's playing well. So the fact that St. John's has swept the series from Xavier is looking really good. Looking really good. So this Johnny's team, to me, is right up there with Marquette. And this Johnny's team is a better defensive team. And they have handled this ranking very well. They have handled this ranking to the point where St. John's fans were saying, oh boy, it looks like, we're ranked and now c'est la vie. So much for that, right? It didn't go so well. Well, guess what? This team found a way to gut it out and now they can look ahead. They are playing outstanding at home where they are 13-0. How great would it be if they could continue to win every game at home and finish the slate undefeated? All right. Their away games, they're fine. They're 3-1. So this team has put itself in position to be able to win. Now, will the lack of a 3-point shot or the lack of free throw shooting consistently come back to bite this team in the ass? I don't know. I don't know, but we're going to find out a little bit more. All right. They're going to go to Washington, D.C. this week, and they're going to face a hungry Georgetown team that has had some tough losses of late. Then they host Providence. Like I said, it's great that they swept the season series from Xavier, but they still have to play UConn twice. They still have to play Marquette twice, including the last game of the regular season in the Big East. So that last game, how smart were the schedule makers? March 8th, Saturday, that game is going to be on national TV on Fox, and that could decide the regular season champion in the Big East Conference. So a lot of games to be played, but you have to love the position that St. John's has put itself in. Okay, that's St. John's. Now let's talk about Quinnipiac. The MAC conference right now is about three teams. Three teams at about the midway point. It is Quinnipiac, it is Marist, and it is Merrimack. Those three teams are in first place and have separated themselves from the rest of the competition in the MAC conference. All right. Good for John Dunn and Marist. They're in position to do things that they've never done at Marist. And good for Merrimack and Jersey Joe Gallo because he can coach his ass off as well. You have three very good coaches in Gallo, Pecora at Quinnipiac, and John Dunn at Marist. Listen, the regular season championship really means nothing in the MAC. It's nice, okay? But over the recent years, outside of Rick Pitino, and Iona, the regular season champion rarely wins at all. You've had, St. Peter's make Cinderella runs twice. So funny things happen in the MAC tournament. But I'll say this, all right? Quinnipiac is looking really good. They're getting healthy. They have their captain point guard back in the fray. Savion Lewis returned as Quinnipiac beat writer. And, interesting, if you follow my guy Jaden Daly and Daily Dose of Hoops, if you go to the blog, there was a great quote by one of Daly's co-workers there talking about Tom Pecora, having a conversation at 7 o'clock in the morning before the Rider game. Savion Lewis was out there putting up shots. Pecora was there at 7 a.m. Savion Lewis was there at 7 a.m. putting up shots, and they had a conversation. And Pecora was like, "Listen, you've been injured. I'll start you if you want, but if we can just play you 15, 20 minutes tonight, let's ease you back into the rotation. I'll give you minutes, but I think the best way for you to do it is for you to come off the bench." And Lewis agreed to do it. That's what captains do. Didn't have a great game, but did just enough. 6 points, six assists. More importantly, Quinnipiac got the win. And it's an opportunity for Lewis to get his legs back on him and be really, I'll say the Robin to Amari Monroe's Batman. Amari Monroe is the leading scorer. He is the man on this team. And Savion Lewis, while he's the captain, knows his role and knows that Monroe needs to score. And Monroe scored in this game another double-double as Quinnipiac took care of Ryder and did what they had to do. So you get Lewis healthy, you get this team going, and the Bobcats, they were the preseason favorites. Remember, in the MAC conference, they were the preseason favorites. Why? Because they had the most returning experience and all conference players, and they were a team that is right where they're supposed to be. You know, Marist was predicted to be up there as well, no surprise. And Merrimack was expected to make a splash as well in this conference. So, interesting week ahead for Quinnipiac. You know, they kind of get a week off after that win, and they have Fairfield coming up next. We know about that rivalry in Southern Connecticut. Those two teams are really kind of trending in opposite directions. Fairfield's struggling, under 500 in the MAC, and Quinnipiac's at home. You know, that's a game that the Bobcats have to win. And then after that, we turn the page to February. And that's a situation where, you know, they don't play every team twice in the MAC because they have more teams this year. They've added these teams, so you're not going to play everyone twice. But Quinnipiac has some big games, you know, coming up against Iona. St. Peter's will be scrappy, but the schedule is kind of favorable. It's kind of favorable where, you know, they're not playing Merrimack until March, and they only play Marist once, and Marist has the tiebreaker. So, should they finish with the same record as Marist, it'll be the Red Foxes who get the tiebreaker. So, something to think about there in the MAC. But you know, Monroe has been fantastic. You know, Lewis, now that he's healthy, the other guy that I really like on this team is the big guy, 6'8", Paul Otieno. He's been putting up stats after stats, and he has been extremely, extremely consistent this year, averaging 12 and a half points and nearly 9 rebounds a game. In so many aspects, I mean, he has been their second leading scorer. And, you know, when he gets double doubles, this team wins. Simple as that. When Otieno gets double doubles, this team wins. One of his best games of the season was against Siena when, I mean, Quinnipiac won by 20 in that game. And Otieno put up 12 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks. So, look out for the Bobcats. You know, I know they had that loss against Central Connecticut back in December, but since that time, since that loss to Central Connecticut, Quinnipiac has only lost one game. That was to Marist. They've won 7 of 8, including 5 in a row. So Tom Pecora has this team cooking. So I wanted to talk about the Bobcats. Very interesting week coming up. I'm trying also on the podcast to get John Dunna. And I know, you know, is Marist in the tri-state? Are they not? Poughkeepsie's close. Well, John Dunna has ties here, has ties to the tri-state when he was an assistant at Seton Hall and under Lewis Orr. So I'm hoping, don't be surprised if in the coming weeks I can get either Dunna or Joe Gallo. Because he's from New Jersey as well, from Merrimack. But right now, those three teams have the ones that have separated themselves. But look out for Iona. That's the team, if you're following the MAC right now, Iona is playing much better basketball, and they are a team, a dark horse right now on January 26th. They are the dark horse in the MAC. Okay. That'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. Keep spreading the word. Give us a follow. Share the podcast. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.